before you even hear a word we say, hit subscribe, hit follow. If you're hearing this on iTunes, write us a nice review and rate us. Give us a nice rating, even if you don't like us.
Tell us to piss off.
If you're hearing us on Spotify, hit follow. If you're on YouTube, hit subscribe. We need you to subscribe. Facebook, like us there. Twitter, fuck Twitter. I'm done with Twitter. Twitter sucks.
We're back. We'll catch up to Christmas. The Simpsons eventually.
Yeah. And every time we take a break, I guess our seasons are marked with the new year. So this is technically season 4, unless you just want to call it a continuation of the beginning.
How long was the last show?
The last show was like December.
Hey, who was that?
Hi.
Somebody else in the room with us.
Yes, I am. Hi.
we have a new member of the gang. Actually, you're not a new member. You're like been floating around with us forever. We go back.
Hiding.
In
plain sight.
In Stickdom.
Mike had her tucked away in the basement someplace, and we just got her out of wrapping and brought her up.
Yep.
She's been mummified.
Yes.
We have Marissa with us.
Hi Marissa.
Hi. And, hello.
Yeah, we go back, I guess, I don't know how many years now, but we're kind of like film geeks together. Before music, we have like our movie history. We kind of clicked on...
Yes, we did.
Because we're both film snobs, and we use the art form of the word cinema, you know, because that's how snobby we are. We use words like cinema.
Look, I love movies too, but I don't do that.
I think our first conversation was like on Fellini or something.
Yeah, Fassbinder or some shit.
Fassbinder, yeah, probably. Yeah. See, she schooled me on that. I didn't even know anything about that.
Yeah,
I knew.
My tastes have gotten a little bit more.
Now, is that just being a fan, or is it? Or did you have a major in it or anything?
No, just a
film fan.
Just like watch a lot of movies. Had a video card to Kim's in the city.
And awesome.
Watched a lot of movies.
That's pretty cool.
Kim's video, man.
Yeah, which got me really nowhere in life.
We're Marissa with film, lame
stuff. No, I know.
No, we're cool people, man. We were like, it was like Christmas Eve one year, and Mike Nirenberg was like, you got to meet Marissa.
Yeah.
And I already knew who you were because you had turned up at parties, and I knew you from Vintage Vinyl.
Yes.
And, so I pretended to meet you.
No, I think you said, "Did you used to work at Vintage Vinyl?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yes, I did."
Yeah, but I remember it. Nirenberg's like, "Mike's into film," and you like literally like ran across. You're like, "Film?"
Yeah,
and it was like a magnet. Whoa. Like, you
not
just, like,
many people
like,
in our town knew, you know, who these, when
you say they're a film fan, they're thinking like The Godfather and stuff like
that. I love that. No, yeah, man, I love that.
The Godfather.
That's there too.
The Godfather's got probably the greatest movie ever.
Yeah. But as I've gotten older, some things, you know, when you're young, you can be pretentious.
Life happens. You get older,
and then you're not so serious
life
anymore.
Life happens.
Yep, exactly.
In a nutshell.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, those films were, I mean, you know, even actors, you know, modern actors, a guy like Johnny Depp, say, he respects like a lot of all those noir films and stuff like that. And it kind of made him who he is. I think he was talking to Letterman about it one night in an interview. And I was impressed. I'm not a huge fan of his, but I was impressed with his knowledge of the craft.
Yeah.
And that made me respect him a little bit.
Smart guy, yeah.
He is pretty smart.
Smart guy, yeah.
Very well spoken, and it was a great interview. Letterman is like the Howard Stern of talk shows.
Yeah.
He's just a great interviewer.
Yeah. No, all those 80s slasher, that's where it started. It was like the 80s slasher movies, and then...
I think I'm... Are you our age?
No.
You're younger than us.
I'm younger, yeah. Okay.
I saw those in drive-in theaters in upstate New York.
Yeah.
In the Catskills, where, like, you're like, fuck, is Jason going to come out, like, from behind us right now? I mean, I grew up watching those slasher flicks. We're on the same page with that.
Yeah, slasher movies, all those USA Up All Night kind of shit. Love that, too.
That's killer.
Yeah, I miss that stuff. But.
So what really got you into rock and roll? Obviously, I just heard that you worked at Vintage, which is really cool. For those of you who aren't in the know, Vintage Vinyl is a local record store to us in Woodbridge, New Jersey, Ford's, New Jersey. But what got you into music? Was it music from movies, or were you just always a music fan?
Always. I mean, even when I was little, I was brought up on MTV. That was my babysitter. So, so yeah, kind of an appreciation for that. I have older sisters, so three older sisters. You know, one was into the Dead, the other was into metal, and the other was into hip hop. So I got a nice rounded,
very eclectic mix.
Yeah, nice education in it. So
that's a pretty damn good mix.
Yeah, I mean, my ear, you know, I don't discriminate, you know.
And you still listen to all those genres?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you and all your sisters are kind of separated by a few years each, right?
Yes.
So you get a nice, like,
broad.
You kind of span the entire history of
exactly.
rock. You know,
well, that's all the questions I have for her. I mean, no. I'm done interviewing her. Now she's going to be part of the show.
Yeah,
you've
I mean, my
passed
oldest
the
sister,
audition.
She was into the Dead, but also huge Priest, you know, fan. And
yeah.
That I grew up on Zeppelin, that kind of stuff. That was kind of the first
thing I
responded
to. I'm not going
to
name names. We don't want to out your identity, man.
Mm-hmm.
For freaks out there. But I ran into one of your sisters at a Priest concert once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did she travel with the Dead, or she just was a
yeah,
fan?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. She traveled. You know, it's funny because I hated the Dead, actually. That was like the one band, I think... You don't really get it when you're super young. And then I got older, and I think I started smoking weed, and I was like, oh, I kind of get this now. It's pretty good, yeah. You know?
I've always known of them, obviously. Was never a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
Never got to see them. And then 2 summers ago, I got to see John Mayer playing with the Dead & Company in Camden. And really changed my, you know, I do like jam bands. I'm big on the Brothers.
Yeah.
Fan. So it kind of changed my mind a little bit about them. I was like, let me explore this a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's the whole culture. Is just
it's
really,
the whole culture that surrounds it. You know, it's a bit cult-like. But I think, you know, with the Dead, too, I love old outlaw country. And Bob Weir kind of, you know, that's what I was like, oh, wow, all right, I get this now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on I got the jammy stuff. But, yeah. All right.
What's the road to Hanoi Rocks? Because this kind of leads into our topic.
My
where
hair
we're
metal.
Going to be talking about the dirt.
Yeah.
Because I never met anybody that even so much as even uttered the name Hanoi Rocks.
Two
and
people.
Then, like, with you.
I know. Two people from Rahway, two people. Now
really?
You're the third.
Love them.
That new Hanoi Rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorites, actually.
That's crazy.
Yeah, one of my favorites. Well, I think that's also because, you know, growing up on hair metal and then glam, you know, so they were more glam to me. But yeah, I mean, it's good rock and roll. I mean,
All you got to do is look at Raz and know how glam they were. I mean, they, you know, Raz?
Yeah. Oh, Raz, yeah.
I mean, he was just really like out there. He was something right out of the 70s.
Oh, totally. And then you had Michael Monroe, who's
and
just
Michael
beautiful.
Monroe, obviously, yeah. He was that
like a beautiful.
He was the stereotype of that genre.
Yeah.
If you will. He had solo records out too, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Was it late 80s? I guess it was.
It was a Dead, Jail, and Rock
and
Roll.
Did you interview one of them, or did you? I know you've done you've interviewed several. Musicians
I did.
In the past,
never...
and you've hung with quite a few people. But was anybody in that group? Anybody you've ever crossed paths with?
That's a good question. I can't even. I think one of them. I forget who it was. Years ago, was working in a record store.
Yeah.
On St. Mark's.
Okay.
Maybe it was Sam Yaffa. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody had tipped me off that he was working there. And I was like, you know, oh, shit. And I went in and I kind of was like, what am I going to say to you? You know, I just was like, oh, cool. You know, there he is. And that was it. But, yeah, no, never. I would love to. But, yeah.
We got to pick your brain at some point. We got to pick your brain.
Yeah, well, I want to roll off of your question a little bit. Just for one. I don't want to get too far off topic. But working at Vintage... When you were working there, were they still having like the in-house? Obviously, they always had the signings, but were they having like the in-house like sessions and stuff like that as well?
They were. No, actually, it was a little bit. They had some shows there, but when I was there, I wasn't there for very long. Maybe 6-7 months.
You were there for like almost like the beginning of like the really big guests coming there.
Yeah,
on
there was no one
basis.
Really huge when I was there. It was a lot of hardcore shows.
Slayer,
like, you know,
Slayer has been there a bunch of times, I think. But I just know that the Winery Dogs played there not too long ago, and I wasn't able to go. But I just totally dig it because, when I saw that like little stage come up in the back, I was like, oh, wow, look at this. And then DHA got heavily involved, and even SOU.
Yeah. No, that's cool. No, I think they had that there when I was there, but No, that was the first job I got fired from.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like a teenager. I think I lied about my age, and I didn't have a car. So they're like, well, why can't you ever get here on time? But no, that would have been cool because I know there was like an Aussie there and a bunch of people were there.
Sure, he has.
So.
Kind of crows. Yeah. I mean, even off metal and just rock and roll.
Yeah. The nice thing, too, was that I was heavily, into vinyl. So all the used, they had a great used record selection there.
They still do.
And that was when vinyl, nobody wanted vinyl.
Yeah,
everybody
was like, giving
99 cents a piece.
Crates would come in, and I mean, I was like in heaven.
Yeah.
Get them for like barely nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Now I'm like struggling to put my collection back together because everything I sold or
gave away. I got Diary of a Madman for $4.
Away.
I have everything in a trunk.
If you get that for $4, that's you're lucky.
I mean, it's beat up as hell, but I was like, Jesus Christ, it's $4.
Yeah. I know.
Even when I brought it up.
$4 for a shitty copy.
Even
now,
when
too.
I brought it up to the counter, he's like, you just found that in the bin? I was like, yeah. He goes, that's a good So I'm walking out of there that night with that. Asia by Steely Dan. And Riley wanted Thriller. Surprisingly enough, Thriller, they still make so many copies of that record.
Yeah.
It's still only $20.
Really?
$20 for that album.
Yeah, that's crazy.
New?
Brand new.
Brand new?
Yeah.
Brand
new. A lot of them are like, over, at least.
Asia, I think I paid $27
for.
Because
there's so many copies of Thriller. There's so much Thriller out there. You know?
Yeah, it just blew me away
copies.
That because vinyl is... New vinyl right now is just ridiculously priced.
Yeah.
The millennials are paying the price.
Yep,
I'll buy that. I'll buy that.
They're fancy little setups.
You know, every time Riley, my daughter's name is Riley. Every time she wants a Billie Eilish, she wants Panic at the Disco. There's $27 a record.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Or you buy the used, and when it skips, you put the penny on top so it doesn't skip.
Remember that?
Sometimes a penny was too heavy. Yeah. You have to use a dime as a little lighter.
A quarter would really warp it, though, but... No, that's so funny. Yeah, I can't have a record player out because I have little kids, so they will destroy.
You're the third person, Hanoi Rock. That's wow. So did you see the dirt yet?
Yes, I saw the dirt. The dirt.
I'm reading the comments. Some of the comments, and I'm like, some people are like actually like a little bit more hostile than I ever intended to be.
Yeah,
I'm not hostile about it. I Mike and I discussed this pre-show. I didn't like it the way it was acted. The actors I thought were horrible.
Yeah, it was like a TV movie. It was cheesy. I mean, I found it entertaining, but I wouldn't take it. Did you ever read the book?
No.
Yeah, see, the book is...
The book is the dirt.
It's fucking great.
Yeah,
the book is great. And this is watered down.
The stories of Ozzy, though, are notorious. I mean, I knew those going into it.
Oh, totally.
So see it
you knew that was going to be... They were going to, show that.
That.
And they were going to show every little detail
of
that because it's something that's, they want for the shock value.
Of course,
That guy Machine Gun Kelly just pissed me off. From the second I saw him come onto the screen, he was the guy who played Tommy Lee. From the second I saw him enter that film, I was like, I want to strangle this guy.
Now, what didn't you like about him, out of curiosity?
He was just a fucking goofball. I mean, it wasn't even... Tommy was always that kind of a goofy guy, or is always that kind of a goofy guy, and like lanky and arms going around. It kind of reminds me of a Muppet.
Yeah.
But this guy just took it to a whole nother level where I was just like, oh my God, move the camera away from him. Mm. Even the guy who played Mick Mars, who I love, because he was a guy in Game of Thrones.
Yes, yeah.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I do like him as an actor. He's a British actor. I've seen him pop up in a lot of different things. I was just like, I think he was reaching.
He was nothing like Mick Mars either.
Nothing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I felt like he was like almost like a caricature or something. Like
they all were.
They just almost made him seem like I don't know, like Igor or something. Like he was just like this character, just like he barely spoke. If he said something,
it was
like very like monosyllabic.
He was older than them, so
old enough.
Yeah,
they call him old man.
Yeah,
There's truth behind that too.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that I did like about it that they took from the book. The Ozzy stuff, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The Hanoi Rock stuff, that whole crash with Vince. I feel like he just kind of walked away from that. And I mean, he killed somebody.
Oh, totally.
And he did no time. Theater, Theater of Pain either was out or just came out or was about to come out. And they were worried if Vince was ever going to fucking be able to perform again over that. I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like 16, I think. So I did dig that. And I liked the backstory for, it's actually one of my favorite Cruise songs, for On With The Show.
I didn't
realize that he wrote that about himself. That
Yeah.
He wrote that.
I
found that interesting.
Yeah, I like that they focused on early Crew. Because I think that's the best stuff.
Yep.
Those first two albums first one's great.
I like Shout.
I love Shout. Yeah.
Shout. And then I kind of skip up to maybe one or two. Believe it or not, I like Dr. Feelgood.
There's a few good jams.
I saw that tour, and I don't know. It's just something about that record that it, I don't know, man. It's I don't know. It's not in the first two albums.
No, no. I mean, the first one is great. Shout at the Devil, I always have a soft spot for it because when I was little, my sister came home with that album, and it scared the shit out of me. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And you shout, and I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, scary as shit. And then you get older, and you're like, oh, my God, this was not. It's like Kiss, you know? It's probably the same thing.
I get that from somebody that's a little bit younger than us.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I was never a fan. I never liked Motley Crue.
Yeah.
I didn't hate them, but I was just never a fan. I think for the most part, it was Vince Neil, his voice.
Yeah.
He's horrible
but
live.
But that said, I get it. I get it when you say it scared the shit out of you. Like, to me, I look at it and I was like, all right, who are these wannabes? Like they're taking a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and they're doing everything Kiss did and whatever. The video, you saw the blood, you know, but I get it.
Like,
you know,
that was
your introduction to something that's like, holy shit, what's this about? You know,
who are these guys? What's
and
going on?
And you're right, though, because it kind of felt that way when I was a kid seeing Kiss. You were like, what is that?
So
that's
that
the demon,
Kiss was
man.
Like that's, the scare. Yeah, that was horrifying.
That was their version of like her generation's version.
Different generation, exactly.
You know, and
it comes
around like literally almost like a decade after Kiss.
Yep.
Yeah. Because like Kiss hits in 73. Well, I guess it was 74, but
82 was Crew, I guess, right? 81, 82?
Yeah.
81, 82. Like, they were really on, like, the national radar by the time, like, when in between Too Fast for Love and Shout at the Devil.
Yeah.
It wasn't right when the first record came out, but it was kind of, like, in between when they opened for Kiss.
Yeah, because by the time Shout came out, it was already, like, you know, they opened for Kiss,
and they opened for somebody else. I don't remember who it was, but I know they opened for Kiss. On the
they were killing the strip, though, man.
Tour.
I mean, for however many years they had the first record out, and they were just killing the strip.
Yeah,
it kind of reminds me of what Van Halen was doing when they first broke. I mean, they were just lighting it up on the strip, and you're like, how is this band not signed?
Yeah. I thought it was. I mean, I had fun watching it. I mean, I was like watching it. I was just like, I had a smile the whole time.
Yeah.
I knew what was ridiculous. I knew what was historically wrong. I was never a fan, so I don't know the history the way their fans do, and I don't know about the songs and the lyrics and all that stuff. But you know, if you grew up with metal and you knew the timeline and you kind of lived through it,
they jumped around quite.
You know what they were getting wrong. Yeah,
it was one thing.
I found that was ridiculous about it was they signed with Elektra or whatever their label was. They signed their deal, and the same night, Vince Neil or one of them is like banging the guy's
chick,
right, the A&R guy's
chick
as they're about to go on stage at an arena.
Yeah.
And they open with Shout at the Devil.
Yeah.
Which was on their second record.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like all of this like history, 2 years worth of history crammed into one scene.
Yeah.
And that drives me nuts because like I'm kind of like a history guy.
Yeah.
You know? And like it's like a pet peeve when you get like something wrong in a timeline.
Yeah.
You know? Something else that totally bothered me was there was Doc McGee. Like the whole thing of Doc McGee when he meets them and he's just like, I manage Kiss. I make a lot of money for Kiss. Number one, Doc McGee didn't manage Kiss until 1996. Like he had nothing to do with Kiss until 1996.
Wow.
You know.
I think they did that just to let everybody, let the audience know who he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because he had managed a lot of bands. And also,
oh, he was on the scene.
I make a lot of money for Kiss.
Yeah. Not many.
In 1981, man, Kiss was like, Kiss couldn't get arrested. Kiss
they
was
couldn't
like,
get out of their own fucking way.
Exactly.
You weren't making money for Kiss then.
So,
yeah.
I was just kind of laughing at that.
And that's when that, you know, they were like the crews of the Motley Crues of the world were like the changing of the guard, the new, you know.
Yeah,
new,
yeah.
And it happens every decade. I mean, you know, because then the Pearl Jam and Nirvana's changed that whole other, you know, that decade was over and grunge hit.
Well, I love the story of the Misfits. It was Glenn Danzig and I think maybe Doyle, or they were on the strip and they chased Motley Crue down. They were going to beat the shit out of them. I always love that story.
Probably because you were sleeping with a girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
Like that. According to the book, the debauchery was just off the fucking charts with these guys.
And even later, I mean, I know good family friends, they're tour managers. So, I mean, this shit still went on.
Yeah.
I mean, even you think they'd calm down when they got older, and I think they were even more fucking crazy, more money. But it's amazing to me how many people watched it. Like, people who I would never think would ever watch something like that or even knew who Motley Crue were, and they're all, you know, oh, it's great. And I'm like,
I think people are just starving for a good story, man.
Yeah.
That has something to do with actual real rock and roll,
yeah,
man. Especially on
Netflix
on the heels of Queen.
Right. Yeah.
Netflix content right now, they're hitting it out of the park.
Yeah.
Hitting it out of the park. They have probably the best 4K library anywhere.
Although I'll never look at like Harry Nilsson song the same way again, that Russian Doll show. Did
yeah.
you see Russian Doll?
Oh, yeah.
I tried to watch
know.
It. The second episode, I kind of like halfway through the second. Like, I'd like to try it again.
Yeah.
But after I was halfway through the second episode, I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
No, it killed the song.
I can't do this anymore. This is just like, you know, did you know that show? Did you try
yeah,
watching
yeah,
that?
I tried it. I was like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of hers. I can't think of her name.
She's annoying.
She is. She was annoying in American Pie. She was annoying
yeah.
in Orange is the New Black.
She's so acty and over the top and just...
I only
down
know her
Beverly
from...
Hills,
down.
Down
that's
oh,
that's
Beverly
what I know
Hills,
her from.
Beverly Hills.
No, Down and Out. It was a Down and Out. And Beverly,
no.
The one with Alan, where Alan Arkin is her father.
Alan Arkin's
yeah,
her father.
Beverly, it was the Beverly Hillbillies movie.
Was it?
No,
yeah,
no,
Down
no.
and Out in Beverly Hills is like an 80s movie.
Right, right, but it's not Beverly Hillbillies.
No, it's Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
No, I think she's correct that Down and Out in Beverly Hills was like
the slums of Beverly Hills.
Slums of Beverly Hills.
Yeah,
you
there
got
you
it,
go.
You got it.
Something with Beverly Hills.
Three minds on movies we weren't going to
yeah.
not leave. That one wasn't going to leave the room unattended.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of soundtracks,
this is like 80s girl over here. Like she's like, you know, like your knowledge of the 80s is just like, okay, I'm not going to argue with it.
Yeah.
I say it's the 80s, okay.
I do feel that they got the soundtrack right. They put the right kind of music in, you know.
For Russian Doll?
No, The Dirt.
Oh, for The Dirt. Yeah,
Came
yeah.
Back to The Dirt. They sprinkled in just enough good stuff.
Mm.
Again, On With The Show.
Yeah,
happens to be one of my favorite songs
too,
on
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
On that first album. And I was like, oh, okay. They threw that one in there.
Yeah.
Live
yeah.
Wire unit was going to make.
Live Wire was one of the few Crue songs that I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of stuff from the first album. It's great. Too Fast for Love. Like, those songs are great. And... yeah, it's weird to hear them on a TV, you know, a show. Usually the Motley Crue songs, you hear girls, 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 and the big
yeah.
ones, and mm-hmm. that one, and you're like, oh, this is cool. But yeah, it's very interesting, the people who really like it. So
yeah, that was interesting. And again, that's Netflix. Netflix is just putting out the content.
Yeah,
you know, you have a Netflix account, you're looking for something to watch.
Yeah,
there it is. I mean, I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan, and I can remember early on, I've read all the novels. I knew everything that was coming before it came.
Yeah.
Now I'm in the dark. Because
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I was like, I was trying to preach to everybody about how great this show is going to be. How great. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. And all
yeah.
of a sudden, after the middle of that first season, it just skyrocketed.
Yeah, after the Red Wedding or whatever. Yeah.
Red Wedding, probably. And like, everybody watched it.
Yeah.
We were talking about this on the phone, related to the influence of like the Motley Crue. When they get back to the when you go
this.
Back to the trailer, when you go back to the trailer and you got the guy going, we're going to show them, so we're going to give the world something that nobody's ever seen before, you know?
Yeah.
What did they do? Like, my question, seriously, like, if people thought I was hating on them, I really wasn't hating. Like, I'm asking, like what did they do besides have their drummer upside down that was like nobody ever did before? And were they trend followers like that? And like, I don't mean that in a disparaging way. Every band in the 80s followed trends.
Yeah.
Like there were very few original acts in the 80s.
Tommy Lee running through the hotel room in his underwear causing havoc. Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin did it first.
The you know, spitting out blood. Kiss,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But they copied a lot from Hanoi Rocks too. So.
Yeah.
Just. You know, Hannah
the drum thing like, was cool though. I mean, him spinning around, I mean, that was unique to them.
Yeah.
Him going up in that cage and spinning. And mm-hmm. to see it was mind blowing.
Right. I mean, so the whole idea of like everybody's drums going out forward and going up and down, and you know, like Peter Criss. But he went
he
upside
went
down. He
went
out over
he
the crowd.
Went out
yeah.
Over
so
the crowd on this fucking extending arm and
was,
spinning kinda, like on
yeah.
a goddamn roller coaster
yeah.
and playing. What was cool about it is he was playing. What did he say? How did he say it? It was a Dr. Feelgood tour when he did it too. Something like these are the best songs to like drink and get laid to, or something along those lines. It was like AC/DC and Zeppelin, and they had the music, but he was just the drum track was taken out, and he was just thumping away. And I'm not gonna take anything away from that guy's talent. He's probably the most talented guy in that group.
Yeah.
As far as you know,
yeah.
individual.
Yeah.
Musically, though, man, is there anything that hasn't been? I mean, I don't
just
know.
Good
it's
rock
just,
and
it's
roll.
Just good rock and roll,
yeah.
and it just kind of fits in with what was going on, the style of what
yeah,
was big in the
I mean,
80s.
With them,
and,
though, you know,
I mean, Vince, you had a very he had a very unique, distinctive voice.
Oh, totally. And
like
also,
it or
you
not.
Had these guys who were all dark, and then you had this blonde in the front.
Right.
So they stood out.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely stood out for that. Yep.
Yeah.
He was not a good live singer, though. Look, go look at the US Festival. Motley Crue's performance at the US Festival.
Yeah.
Eesh.
Well, they also, I mean, I don't know if you guys know about Venom, but they stole a lot of their look from Venom.
Did they really?
Yeah. Venom were into that whole, the same studded, you know.
Yeah. That's
and yeah, you know, and they were pretty much right after Venom. So, I mean, maybe they were just influencing them, but they
also, Venom was probably still considered very underground at that point, though,
yeah.
too, right? I mean,
like, I looked at a picture of Motley Crue from like 1981 when their first record came out, and they just looked like it was like a conglomeration of like they raided Paul Stanley's closet and David
yeah.
Lee Roth's closet with the spandex, like the tiger stripes. You know,
yeah.
It was like David Lee Roth was wearing that stuff on the Fair Warning tour.
Yeah.
And
animal
stuff that,
print.
You know, that it was really, it came straight out of Paul Stanley and David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
But,
and New York
and,
Dolls,
and,
too.
You know, and the Venom thing. Dolls. Yeah,
the
Dolls.
It looked like it belonged in the
yeah.
group.
But,
you know, between that and the Swede and all that, you know, glam, you could tell he was.
There really weren't, like, I think, like, a lot of, and this is just an opinion, like, you know, anything else, it's like, but I don't think there's that many trend setters. There are more trend followers. There are very few original people in each decade. I would say, like, maybe one or two, three at the most in each decade that set the trends in each decade in, like, dozens
Crue,
and dozens.
Lenny Kravitz. We discussed that briefly.
Yeah, like the 80s. In the 80s, like, the trendsetters were probably, like, Michael Jackson, Madonna. And what would be the trendsetter for metal? Like everything. Like if there was a template for
Sabbath,
what for what
made,
for
yeah.
what became
made
the 80s?
Yeah, because everybody had like that a black leather with like the studs on it,
yeah.
which is straight
yeah.
out of
yeah.
the Priest or even made. I mean, he had a vest version of that jacket.
Yeah.
But it had all those studs in it. British metal, it basically was, I think.
Yeah.
You know, early
new
British
wave.
Metal.
Yeah, the whole
yeah.
new wave of British heavy metal
and
all that
stuff. Everything was coming out of Britain out of the '80s until like hair metal really. Yeah,
this is where I surprised myself because I was like thinking about this. And I was like, if I have to be totally honest, and I was thinking about the whole trend setting thing, and like we're Crue trend followers. If there was one thing that Crue did, like maybe inadvertently, and I don't know this to be true. If you think about the timeline of metal, the whole British thing, the Priest, like the early Maiden and all that,
yeah.
Sabbath, for the most part, metal, the look of metal was black.
Yeah.
It was black, studs, leather, 82, 84, right? This is the funny thing. This is like we're talking about this. 80, 82, like the even number years, the big metal acts were releasing records, right? So it was Priest, Maiden. Somewhere around 85, man, Crue comes with Theater of Pain, and Theater of Pain changes the color scheme. Now the whole color scheme changes.
Yeah.
You start lavender. Getting like pastel, like you start getting like lavender and
yeah.
pink, and like
and then
by the end of the year, you got Kiss putting out Asylum, and Gene Simmons looks like
yeah.
Maud.
Yeah,
and the Poisons of the World.
Yeah,
looking
Poison
like,
and Cinderella.
Well, it's like you know. The
I think that's why Crue did it.
In
86,
so
Poison
like
was on their way up.
And the following year, when the big bands
yeah,
came back,
Cinderella too, because that pastel.
Right.
Yeah, the album cover
love
and it was all
record.
Pastel smoke.
I love
right.
that record.
And the following year, when the bigger
record.
Bands like Ozzy and Priest and Maiden came back, they were very colorful
Ultimate
too.
Yeah.
You know, the
Ozzy,
Ultimate Sin.
Like,
Ozzy comes out in the sequence.
What the fuck happened to you, dude?
So I think if anything, like the one time that. Like if they had any influence whatsoever, it was on fashion.
Metal.
It was on like it was like they ushered in like the whole.
They should have been fucking donning Easter baskets.
The Easter egg
it's my
tour.
My Easter scheme. No, it's also
brought
like,
to you by Paz.
I mean, I remember watching The Decline of Western Civilization, the metal years.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, and that was a great turning point because. It really highlighted all those glam bands, all these followers who were
mm-hmm.
pretty much clones of Crue, you know, and then at the fucking end, you have Megadeth, you know, and they fucking
yeah.
come in and you're just like, holy shit, this is awesome. So I feel like that was like a whole turning point, too, from that metal, that cheesy, you know, glam, you know, to something harder and more serious.
Now, Twisted Sister and Van Halen aside.
Okay.
Them two bands aside. The timeline of 85 is very interesting. Like, 85 doesn't end the way it starts. 85 ends, it kind of it ends. Everything's very colorful.
Yeah.
So the band's coming out of 84. It's all very like, you know, Priest was coming out at Defenders of the Faith. You know, Ozzy was Bark at the Moon.
Yeah.
Motley Crue was still like, it was like they were coming off a Shout of the Devil. Yeah. You know, and so by the end of 85, you had Rat, Invasion of Your Privacy.
Yeah.
You know, because Theater of Pain comes out in the spring.
Yeah.
Invasion of Your Privacy comes out in the like fall, late summer, early fall, you know. So it was like kind of like, it was like this chain reaction of color.
Yeah, yeah.
Where color Cinderella and sequin, nice. Robes.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Record.
And everything starts getting added to the whole metal look.
Yeah, because even Tom Kiefer, he wore a lot of purple. And yeah.
And 86 is also the year where, like, you had Master of Puppets and Rain and Blood.
Yeah.
And you had, like, Slayer fans, like, thrash fans that started taking aim at the rest of metal.
Yeah.
And started, like Priest became posers.
Yeah.
Because they put out Turbo.
Yeah,
everybody,
you know,
that wasn't, like, Slayer.
Me off.
Yeah.
That always fucking pissed me off. Because
Ozzy was a poser.
All those,
like,
bands,
you know, there's totally
the
disrespecting,
Slayers of the world and the Metallicas of the world all paid homage to the Priests and the Maidens of the world,
like if
even Kiss. I mean, without those bands, fucking Slayer wouldn't even be around. Tom Araya would be fucking pumping gas at an Exxon station.
That, you know, I don't think it's anything they wouldn't. You know, they all.
Oh, they all admitted
it.
They absolutely did. It was the fans
it's
of
the fans.
Those bands.
It was
that pissed me off more, not the bands themselves at all.
Yeah,
at all. I mean, I could remember seeing Pantera and them bringing up guys from Anthrax and guys and fucking Ace Frehley, and they're doing Kiss songs at the end of the Pantera show, and I was like, oh, this is fucking great.
Yeah.
They all paid homage to them.
Like, 84, if like Priest and Maiden were the shit.
Fuck yeah, they were.
And in 86, if you listen to Priest and Maiden, you were a poser. You know, it was if you didn't play a certain speed.
Get out of here.
You know, and even Ozzy, they were taking aim at Ozzy,
it's
man.
Like now, it's
Prince
like even hip hop, everybody's listening to this fucking Marble Mouth shit, and I'm like, what are you kidding me? That's not growth.
Yeah. I mean, there's
nothing.
Like
you don't like that.
No,
do you?
I'm. You know, there's very few people out. I mean, once in a while, I hear a song I'm like, "Oh, this is catchy," but.
But that's the beat or the rap.
I don't. I mean, a lot of this, like, you know, it's like cadence. It's just the. I don't really.
Like the.
I'm starting to feel my
Tekashi
age now.
Tekashi fucking 6ix9ine.
Oh yeah, that shit's.
Those guys are.
Fucking
posers. Every time one of those guys gets popular again, I wait for the next Eminem record so that he can fucking kill him.
Yeah.
I love it. And you hear it just, he blisters. There's a YouTube video out of him going through each one of those fucking guys and just blasting them. And I'm just, oh my God. He's like, that dude is a lyrical genius. He was born in the wrong color.
But
he really was. And I'm not saying anything bad about that. Dr. Dre knows it.
Yeah.
Missy Elliott even said it about him before he hit. She was like, Dr. Dre's got this guy coming out, Eminem. And I was just like, oh my God, that record dropped. It changed my life.
All right, so another thing I wanted to talk about, and we kind of polled our audience. We have an audience on, like, the people that listen on iTunes, and I can't identify them because I don't look too much into our media host that much, into the statistics and all that stuff. And so it's kind of tough to tell who's listening to us on iTunes. But our Facebook crowd is like, they're like pure metalheads.
Yeah.
You know,
they're
all metalheads. Like each and every one of them.
No, you got to sprinkle a few deadheads in there too.
There's a few deadheads, yeah. So we kind of just like polled the audience on what we should talk about in the first episode. Now, this is before we decided that the dirt was going to be our main topic.
Yeah.
So it said, what music related topic should we talk about? We're taking your request for the first episode of the new season. We'll just riff on a couple of these things. So the use of backing tracks and the end of live concerts, quote unquote, very controversial now if you're following the Kiss tour.
Okay. No,
because Paul Stanley has been, you know, well, he lip synced a bunch of the early Kiss shows on the early part of the tour, and people were just like tracking that. They were just kind of like putting show, like they put like four versions of Detroit Rock City side by side, and it was identical.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think Paul is kind of like caught on, like people are, you know, he's on trial, people are watching him now, and like so now they're kind of doing it live. He's trying to sing live more.
Yeah.
But you know, I know of more than a few people who were at the Garden show and said they had a blast.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah.
They lived up what with all of the hype about this stage.
Oh.
They delivered.
That's
they've never done anything
There's
this
another
big,
one.
Man.
I
want to
kick
just
Nikki Sixx in his fucking face.
It's
how dare he say Kiss ripped them off?
Yeah.
For their final tour.
Yeah.
Fuck you, man.
They owe everything they
you
did.
You couldn't
to Kiss,
even stand in Gene Simmons' fucking boots, man.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Look, Nikki, just stop, just stop, yeah. stop.
That's ego.
Maybe that's just the Kiss fan.
No,
in me.
Yeah, that's his ego, and that's yeah. No, I.
They ripped us.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah. yeah.
And again, that was a blurb in Mike's. That was one of Mike's favorite companies that like to put those little blurbs out on Facebook. That blabbermouth.net.
Yeah.
Boom, that was a blurb.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it got
that
me.
Was,
people
it was get
clickbait.
Fired.
Yeah. It was clickbait though, because it got me. I was like, "What is this asshole saying?"
Yeah. But look, it worked because it even if Nikki Six didn't even think that, if he put that in
fired
there,
right
it worked. It
the only thing I could right say in his in, like just to agree slightly with him that it was yeah it resembles it because it's the same stage designer.
Yeah.
Design
yeah.
Guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody said
they ripped you off.
Yeah.
That's.
New artists or bands? Question mark, question mark, question
mark. We
always
get hit with that.
We always get, yeah. So I like, if you're on Facebook with me, and we all are, so I mean, you guys know, I've been talking about endlessly about this band called Shannon and the Clams, and Shannon Shaw, which
okay.
I love, or she's got a solo album out, and it's called Shannon in Nashville. Check it out. That's all I'm going to say. Just check
I'm
it out.
I'm not currently looking for anything new to listen to.
Okay.
You, in the last couple years, you've always had a new band to say, like, check this out. This is Thermate, or this is Ghost. And Ghost turned out to be huge.
Ghost was huge, yeah.
You called them, man. You called it.
Thermate, Ghost, you know? Winery Dogs.
Yeah.
You had Greta Van Fleet, though.
And then there was another one that you talked about when you were in Texas that Aaron turned you on to. It was more like a blue Ben.
What the hell was he?
Or it was something.
Yeah, I can't. We have to listen back to that. I can't remember who the hell he was. That guy's great.
Yeah, and Lori from, you know, from Liberty, her daughter. Remember when her daughter was in town last year?
Yeah.
And she was into the same person.
Yeah.
Ratcliffe.
Ratliff. Daniel Ratliff.
Yeah.
Daniel Ratliff.
Isn't that the dude from the
Harry Potter?
Or Ben Radcliffe or Daniel? Is
Daniel
it?
Radcliffe.
All right.
Daniel Radcliffe? Is that Harry Potter?
Harry.
Yeah. Or that's the kid.
Something
yeah.
Radcliffe.
Something Ratliff.
Yeah.
It's not Radcliffe.
Nathaniel?
Though. It's Ratliff. Nathaniel. That's
yeah.
it. Nathaniel Ratliff.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Good.
But
anyway,
good like they
stuff.
Were.
Real good stuff.
Okay.
There was something else that. Oh, I saw it at Asbury Lane.
There was one.
Papers.
There was one funny one that I want to get to. There was like, and I don't know how much any of us know about this dude. I just know very, very broad, like...
Ooh, the guy who posted it or the band?
No, the band, the person. Okay, so like, so Vic says, why the hell is Mike Patton recognized as a genius? And anybody answered his question, Mike Patton, like the dude from...
Faith No More.
Yeah. And like 1,000 other bands.
Yeah,
right? They do treat him. You know where he falls under? He falls under that fucking goddamn... Oh, what's his fucking name? That blonde haired dude, fucking Beck. Oh, I can't stand Beck. And that's who Patton reminds
me of. I like Beck.
Critics think he's the greatest goddamn thing to walk the face. I saw him on Saturday Night Live. I'm like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah.
It's like when you talk about Radiohead, and here's Radiohead.
Yeah, here they are. Everybody should be. I can't even say it because now we have a female
bowing
on
down
the program
to...
again. Everybody should be down on their knees. Like, I'm out of here with that shit.
Yeah,
thank you. Now I finally got somebody to go against him with Radiohead.
I can't wait till you guys go head to head on Steely Dan, though.
Oh.
Yeah, had to go there.
Why did
you?
Okay,
we need to have a show just on her Donald Fagen experience.
Yeah,
I heard he's a real prick.
She told it
literally.
In parts on Twitter.
Yeah, oh, really? Yeah, I heard. I heard he's a real.
Remember your parts of like everybody's like waiting for the next part.
I don't think I ever finished it.
You never did finish
it. ADD. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard he's
the
a real asshole.
Milkshake.
I think I read somebody talking about cutting his hair or something like that. I read something about it on Facebook, and he was just like a complete asshole in a barber's chair. That's the last place you want to be an asshole, first of all.
Yeah, well, that's where I... Maybe it was me, because I... That's
you did it?
No, I didn't cut his hair, but he was
you
in my
salon.
Yes.
It had to be...
Yeah, it must have been me.
There was a connection then from the how I got to that story
how
from
the
him.
How the fuck did you get... Yeah.
So that story is through you.
That's probably through me.
Oh, we're
going to
absolutely
likely.
Have a great conversation about that.
Most likely.
And that when you... Because it just struck when you said that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would have read that on her page, though, unless it was linked to you.
Or somebody commented that
maybe.
We're mutual, and
maybe.
Then, and then maybe you saw it. I don't know. Did
maybe.
I put it on Facebook?
You've had some interesting people in your
my world.
Chair.
Yeah,
You still cut hair?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I do.
But so he was in the shop that you worked at.
I worked in...
We don't have to go crazy about
it. No.
I just want to get a small
little
piece of it.
I worked in a very high-end salon in Manhattan,
okay.
In a very famous hotel. His wife, Libby, was a very colorful character. Her and I became friends. But she was a little cuckoo. But she had great stories. She was married to Levon Helm.
Oh, no shit.
For years.
Oh, my God. I would have loved to hear
so
those stories.
So, talk to her. I used to, you know, she's come in. She'd come in all the time.
Yeah.
Hang out with her. I think she even wanted me to work for her at some point, too. And I was like, no, you're too fucking crazy. Anyhow, Donald would come in a lot, kind of wandering in. And, yeah, he, you know, was quite very polite, not a nasty guy, but a secret perv.
He's all, without a doubt. That I definitely.
Yeah.
Their band name alone. Their band name alone.
Yeah.
And the song "Fucking Everyone's Gone to the Movies" is basically about showing porn in a basement. To be honest with you, I mean, he's there. I don't even know if it's a secret about him. I think maybe guys like me in the know.
Yeah.
About that guy, or that he's a fucking
Well, it's also because it's weird because he's not like, all right, you know, you have your 80s rock stars or even your 70s rock stars who are, you know, all about debauchery.
Yeah.
Steely Dan,
no,
were not like that, but you don't associate them with that. Of course, they probably were, but Steely Dan is the last fucking band, you know.
For the most part, they were a faceless band. They were only Fagan and Becker, so nobody knew who they were. They didn't tour for 20 years.
It comes off as creepy on them.
Yeah.
Whereas a guy like, I don't know, a guy like Steven Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as creepy on a guy like that because he's not, he's aged, yes, but he's not balding. He's not, you don't see him driving in a Mercedes.
That's right.
To go pick up fucking groceries from the, you know, the quickie stop or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? I get it. I totally get it.
And he's out. He's kind of like out and you just kind of expect it from him.
Was
he
quiet? Was he a quiet guy?
Quiet guy, polite, you know.
I think he
on various substances, probably.
Yeah, I think he thinks he's Ray Charles. I think he's like the. I truly believe
he looks like Ray. Yep. He looks like a white Ray
Charles.
I truly
believe that he thinks that he is Ray Charles reincarnated.
The last time
I saw them at the Beacon, when he was walking off, like they had a short little break, he's walking up. He even fucking walked like Ray Charles. I'm like, what the fuck? And when he's playing, he's got the head. Hey, he might be a jerk off and the biggest prick going, but I still love that.
And I've never seen them close up. So every time I've seen Steely Dan, it was always from a distance. So when I see Donald Fagen, he looks like Ray Charles. Like he's, you know,
that's Ray Charles.
Yeah, his glasses. I can see that. Yeah,
the last 10 years. You
know. Yeah.
The way his playing style, he turns that head. And he,
yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal.
No, that
That's
makes
a good
sense.
Story. We'll have to go.
Yeah,
I'll
delve into
that
it.
One.
Yeah.
Did you finish the story, or did you kind of like you don't even
I got
have to go there
for now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part two.
Because I was kind of reading, and I was kind of hearing you in the background. I'm kind of reading through these comments. So
we always get the new band one, though, is what I wanted.
Oh, so the new band
one.
In
the wake of losing Peter Tork last week. Now this is from Joel. In the wake of losing Peter Tork, how about the Monkees? Should their contribution to the world of music be considered valid, even if they didn't start out as a real band?
Yeah, I love the Monkees.
I
don't know.
It's not that I hate the Monkees.
Yeah.
But I don't value them. Maybe I devalue them more than I should. I don't know. Their place in history isn't really etched in stone to me.
No, it's pop. You know, I wouldn't put them up there with the Beatles.
I think they're treated accordingly.
Yeah.
I just think that they are where they should be.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they have a couple of good pop songs. You know, pop songs, arguably. But
if I'm gonna go to a band similar, not similar, but I would say like, what the hell's their name? They're on the Apple label. I just gotta fucking.
Badfinger?
Thank you. Badfinger?
Oh, yeah. I love Badfinger.
I would go Badfinger over the... You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
They're in that same kind of genre. They weren't quite...
They didn't get there.
They weren't quite at the top. And, you know, I mean, the Monkees gained popularity because of their TV show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tragic story, the Badfinger story. Really tragic story. Those albums are fucking great. And it's kind of like hidden gems.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine asks, how historically accurate... American Pie is by Don McLean.
Oh,
very
I
accurate.
Song, so I don't ask me that one.
We can move on from
that. It's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Who asked that? Catherine?
Catherine.
Catherine who?
Catherine Marinino.
Oh, that's Kat from Catastrophe.
Oh, okay.
Singer from Catastrophe.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say it's pretty accurate. I don't like it. I was never a fan of it. I kind of cringe when I hear it.
I used to sing the shit out of a song when I was a kid in the backseat on an 8-track cassette, on an 8-track player. And Weird Al Yankovic has a great version of it too.
Does he?
Yeah. Oh, he does.
Yeah, it's about Star Wars.
Oh no!
My, this here Anakin guy. How's it go? My, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later. Now he's just a small fry. I love Weird Al. One thing I regret not seeing Weird Al Yankovic.
With that, man. All right, you wrap it up. If you're listening to us, however you're listening to us, on iTunes, we're on Spotify now, man. Did you know this?
Yeah, I did. You told me that.
We're on Spotify. Not too many people know about that. But wherever you're listening to us, if it says, whether it says follow or subscribe, whatever that mechanism is that attaches you to us, do it. Click on it.
I just think that, Marissa, you just rolled right in here.
Thanks.
I mean, it's literally, if we were two wheels just cruising down the highway, you just kind of split us up right in the middle, and we didn't even hesitate. There wasn't. Yeah,
she just like rolled,
it just rolled,
right
man.
In,
it was just
man.
Oh my god, I can't believe how smooth it was.
Yeah,
for the record, I just met her tonight, and it was just I could not believe how great this show went tonight. And thank you everybody for listening to
Thanks.
It.
Thanks.
Bad news keeps pouring on me. Bad news.